Just a little apology. My microphone disconnected, so my audio has been recorded via my AirPods, so it's kind of crap, but thanks God, luckily, I didn't talk much, so you can still enjoy the episode. Ciao, ciao.
All right, welcome to the 18th episode of our podcast, Unplug Foil, where we talk all about foiling. And we have a special guest today, or actually, I'm the guest again, in Nicolas House, Nicolas Eaton. He's an inline marathon skater. He's a dad, a sports teacher, physical education. He's an endurance machine, and he held or holds the world record in pump foiling with 4 hours, 2 minutes, 54 kilometers. Is there anything, Nicolas, you want to add? Did I forget anything?
Yes, Sharon from Indiana, he broke my record 1 or 2 months ago, about 7 or 8 minutes. So, but he is the world record holder on the time, but I'm still the holder on the distance. So we split the record.
Let's jump right into that. How did that make you feel when he, I guess he posted a video and said, that's my new time. How did that make you feel?
Oh, I was, it was not a problem for me because we push each other. So I know what I have to do during the winter for the next season, probably to go longer or to do something else. I don't know, but I'm happy when there are some other athletes who make a long distance training or record too. Yes.
Is it important for you that you get that title back? Is that a personal push or something that you feel like, well, if I'm not, any record is going to be beaten eventually?
Yes, it's only a question about the time. Somebody else will break the record again. So for me, no, it's really not a problem. I like it. And I don't know if I want to go longer next year again. I can try it because I know I can, with a good preparation, I can go a little bit longer too, maybe. But it's not the most important thing for me.
Maybe you can just tell us when you had that world record, you did that world record with 4 hours, 2 minutes, 54 kilometers. That wasn't really planned, was it, that day? Can you tell us the story?
Yeah, it was a little bit strange because one day before or one night before I had an inland race. It was not that long. It was 21 kilometers, but quite intensive. So I went home and the race wasn't as good as I expected. So I wanted to go in the early morning to make like a cool down, when I can say cool down. Yeah, and to have fun on the lake. So I went at 7 o'clock on the lake of Sempach and started to make a lap around the lake. It's about 17 kilometers. And I felt very good and was motivated. And I told to me, hey, why I can go a second lap. Why not? I've never done before. So I went for the second lap and the conditions were very good. It was almost no wind and the temperature was okay. And I had a lot of water and nutrition with me, especially water. So I did the second lap and still felt comfortable. So I decided to make the third lap because when I make three laps, I have to record. So I did the third lap. But honestly, I was a little bit tired after. It was about more or less three and a half hour. So I push me and give the best to do the maximum out of me. The problem was a little bit, I had a short neoprene, so I became very warm and my food was already burned. Well, I had one or two bananas with me, a carbo bar and water with a little bit of carbo, and I didn't eat something in the morning. So I was really, really exhausted at the end. I was happy that I can go to the shore and not to fail in the water in the middle of to swim back a long time. So that was it. And that finally it was 4 hours, 2 minutes. I was surprised, but I knew that I probably can go longer with a better preparation and better food and so on.
What was the record before that?
It was about 2 hours and 40 minutes.
So you would have had the record for a long time. You didn't have to go the whole third leg.
No, I had the record 2 or 3 weeks ago when the television did the broadcast, and I crashed during the giving the bottle of water. And I crashed. Was a little bit disappointed, but otherwise I was happy that I had the record from Jérôme. And some days later, Jérôme beat my record, and he did 3 hours and 27 minutes, I think. So I was very motivated to break it again. But it wasn't it was not my focus on my training. So otherwise, I would do another preparation. Yeah.
How long do you have to recover after such an attempt? Like because I know that after you do like a marathon, then you're supposed to recover 1 day for every mile that you run, so 20 days.
Not like
doing nothing, but lighter training. How is it for you?
Yeah, with the big wing, it's totally different than with the smaller rings, because I can do an endurance training. It's not like I go for 10 minutes and my legs are burning. So I look at it as endurance training and also like a cool down. I always check my heart frequency, and I can see, okay, it's not a hard training.
Where is that? Your heart rate?
It's about, it's sometimes different, but it was about, normally when I go bicycle on the road, it's about 145, 150 beats per minute. At my record, I started with 130, 135 beats, and it grew up. At the end, I was at 170 almost, yes. My maximum is 190, I think. But my carbs were done. So yes, I was empty. So as I said, with another preparation, it's for sure. It's maybe possible to go longer with more carbs inside. But sometimes it's better when you just do it and without good preparation. And yeah, the weather was good and other things. So,
would you say that it's more important to keep your heart rate low, or to make sure that you are not pumping too much blood in your legs, so that your legs don't start to burn, because then probably you lose the efficiency. So, what do you think is the most important thing?
I think it's important to have a good technique or a smooth technique. Every time you make a little mistake, you have to push again hard, and that makes your leg burning. So I always focus on my technique to go smooth. That's I think that's very important, not to make mistakes.
How can you make your technique better? How can you improve that smoothness? That's not something you can read about and then just do it. How do you do that?
When I started with the Gondor XL, it was just like, wow, it's very easy to go for a long distance. So I think I had already my good technique, but now I train without stabilizer to feel the what better. Have the better water feeling. It's like in cycling, the road cycle, they try to make a round push.
Yeah. Yeah?
And it's almost the same. And another thing is to go in the dark with a little headlight or without light. So I focus more on my technique, and my eyes are like... not to focus the technique with my eyes or how high I am on the water, on the step, on the mast. That are some things. And the other thing, I didn't do it yet, but I want this winter, is what Gael said, to make the pump and glide to have a better feeling for the glide time. But I still think it's better to push always with the same power. But the pump and glide is good to improve the technique.
What you said is incredible. I've never thought about that, because I think I mentioned in one of my videos, like, try to shut your eyes and pump just really, because if you shut your eyes, as you said, you can really feel what's going on. Doing it in the night is like next level, especially maybe in Switzerland in winter time. So yeah, that's tough. That shows that you need the toughness to do these endurance attempts.
Yes, but I like these challenges. It's not like a normal training. It's a special training. That's what I like in cycling too. Sometimes when it's very, very bad weather, I like it more to go out than in a foggy weather. For sure, I like the sun, but I like the polarization. Not always go with the mainstream to make it different. Yes, but when you go alone in the dark, always have to take care that you wear a little light back and in front because of the security. And then I don't normally go around the lake. But probably it would be a challenge with the full moon, go on the lake, around the lake. But I haven't done it yet.
What I did once, and I think maybe that comes a little close to what you just said, I pumped in super clear water and I couldn't see where the surface was. Mm-hmm. And that made it so much harder.
Yes.
And that's probably the same thing if you're mm-hmm. not sure where you are on the mass, but you just have to feel and have to be comfortable with that. That's interesting.
Yes, that's it. When I started with the gone with the big wing, and went around the lake, there are some spots where it's very classy, all depend about the time. And then I felt, oh shit, am I too high or too low on the mast? And then the technique is not so efficient. But I have done 2,000 or 3,000 kilometers this year. You become that technique to... yeah, you can feel it, how high you are. Sometimes you hear it with the stabilizer. And the other thing is that you feel it. Huh?
Do you ever breach because you didn't pay attention?
Yes, when I make a corner, a turn, I'm too high. Then sometimes, not a lot, but sometimes happen. When I go for a long ride around a lake, I know it's better not to fall in the water. So I go into my comfort zone and take care about that thing. But when I made my record with the 4 hour, after 1.5 kilometer, I crashed in a wood in the water. I didn't see it. Then I swim back to another platform, and then I started my time again. So I had this 45 kilometer from the second start. But sometimes you must have luck that you don't crash.
So these 54 kilometers it was, right? Before that, you already had a couple of kilometers.
Yeah, 1.5 kilometers, yes.
Ah, all right. Yeah. It's not like more. 20 kilometers. All right.
No.
But let's talk about that lake, because you said you had three turns or three times around the lake, mm-hmm. and then some small turns as well. Yes. I imagine it can get kind of boring because you're doing so many turns, you see the same place over and over again. If you do three laps of a lake, wouldn't it be cool to have like a bigger lake where you can just like one turn and then you have a long distance?
So you mean the Lake of Bodensee or the Lake of Lucerne? That
well,
would be a big challenge.
That would be a super more big than, challenge, yeah.
Yeah, 50 or 100 kilometers.
And then next year around Australia.
Yes. With big waves. I've done one lap around the Lake of Zug. And is about 42 kilometers, so it's not 55, but it's more or less, yeah, not the same, but
equal. Super long still,
yes.
Yeah.
And it's a super nice lake with the panorama, with the mountains, and that's the place I was born. So it was very special for me to make one lap nonstop. Yes, or the Lake of Thun. I did a research. It's about, I think, 50K. That would be great too. But another problem is about the wind and with the wave condition, with the boats and other things. You have to know the attitude or the
Do you mean how people react or what?
No, where can I go out of the lake? Because the security is very important. Sometimes there are lakes with seagrass and with local winds. So you have to know the spot very good or the lake. That's why I always go or mostly on the Lake of Sempach.
Because there's never wind.
Not never. Today was a little bit. Yeah. It depends about the time, but I know in the morning sometimes a little bit wind, and then a bit later is more or less flat, and then the afternoon again wind. Yes, that's the thing why I like to go around this lake, and it's more or less close to my home. But it's never boring for me because when I go on my cycle, I normally ride back from my work to my home. It's about 45 kilometers. I always do the same distance or the same route. It's a mental thing, I think. You have to be that person that like it to make some laps. But I think it's still better to make 3 laps on the Lake of Sempach than 100 laps for 500 meters.
Yeah, I mean, it's not small. Lake Sempach is not small. I can't imagine doing even half of the lake. But just one thing, if you want to do Lake of Thun, I can help you with that because I was not born in Thun, but I did a lot of sailing there. My dad has a little motorboat there. I could assist you when going around and like pick you up if you fall. So that's an invitation if
nice,
you want to
do
that. And the other thing is people, they do bicycle in their basement, right? And they stay on their thing. So that's really just a thing like that. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you in regards to this topic, how much do you think that, I mean, for you, the wetsuit affects the ride and also the wind? Because I remember from our interview that you said that it's pretty important. And then Yvonne, for example, in one of his latest videos, said that like he can do like 20 minutes in summertime. And then in wintertime, with the difference in water density and with a thick wetsuit, he can barely do 4 or 5 minutes. Is that the same for you?
It's a very good question because my background, I did a study with a sports science and I like to analyze data. I always have my heart frequency with me and with the time and the distance. So I can compare it with what is the effect of a neoprene or of the wind on my power. I would say, for sure, the neoprene has a big effect, negative effect on the power output, on the time I can go for foiling . I try to wear a thin wetsuit, a 3.32 wetsuit during the winter.
And just sorry to interrupt. Today you were with that wetsuit?
No, I wear the thicker one, the 5.3, because I knew sometimes I will speak with you and have small talk, so I get cold too.
Because today it was not even 2 degrees Celsius.
Yes.
So yeah. All right. But go ahead. Sorry.
So normally when I go pump foiling, I'm alone and I make a 2 hour or 2.5 hour training and I go maybe 2 or 3 times to the dock. So I have warm all the time. But compare without a wetsuit, I would say normally I have my average heart rate 140 and with wetsuit is about 10 or 15 beats per minute higher. It depends about the millimeters of the wetsuit. Another thing is about the water of the temperature of the water. I don't know how much is the effect because I'm in some blogs and Instagram channels and they speak about the viscosity of the water is a lot higher with or lower with depends about the temperature. I don't think it's that much different because I always check my speed during the summer and the winter and I can't feel a big difference if the water is 5 degrees or 25 degrees. Maybe it's more in the head thing, or I don't know. Yeah. And the other thing is the wind, for sure. The headwind, today we had some headwind parts. It makes a big difference. It's like in cycling or inline skating. The faster you go, the more it makes it more harder. So with strong wind, I never go out on the lake, not only because of the wind, also because of the waves.
Do you do other foiling activities? And maybe we can get into that. How do you get into water sport at all? But if there's a little wind on Lake Sempach, do you do also some wing foiling or stuff like that?
No, I've never tried. I started my water sports 20 years ago. When I was young, I didn't like the water, honestly. But I studied sports science, and we had some other sports like rowing, like kayak. And that was the time I was first, I started with other sports. Then I decided to buy a kayak for myself, to go for myself, yes. And some years later, I bought a second and third one and a stand-up paddle and so on. But with foiling, I've never had experience. I saw it maybe 3 years ago, the first time on the TV or in the newspaper. And the pump foiling was very, for me, a perfect sport because you need a balance. It's the same, more or less, like inline skating. You need endurance. And the other thing is, it's something very new. You can fly over the water. It's not like you are on the water. You fly over the water. That makes it, for me, so interesting.
How was it the first time you actually flew? Because eventually you started pump foiling, and I guess even you fell in a couple of times, maybe. And then how was it the first time you actually pumped and flew over? What was that feeling for you?
It was very, very cool because I know the speed with my kayak. And then when I made the first pump, I was looking on the platform or on the shore. It was, whoa, I'm fast, huh? So I was a little bit surprised and crashed in the water again. But now it's normal, yes. When I started pump foiling, it was 1.5 years now, in August last year. I started always in the morning at 6 or 6.30 o'clock because I didn't want anybody see me crash in the water. And the family was still sleeping. So for me, important to be home for the family. But I went in the morning. And for me, the quantity is very important. For sure, the quality, but I was alone. So I had to go to try. And at the end, I did maybe 70 times per day. I did it for 7, 8, 9 days. I don't know. So at the end, I had 300 or 400 attempts until I could fly. But it was after 2 weeks, I was able to pump for half a minute.
I have a question. One, who were your teachers? Were you totally self-taught or did you watch videos? And then two, in these 8 days, did you never had the situation where like, well, this sucks, I'm never going to get this?
Not really. I would say I'm strong in my head. That's what I say when I make with my students, when we make an exercise for strength, I always say you have to be strong in your head, because for everybody it hurts. But your head says when it's over. So the first day I was surprised that I can jump on a good position on the board. The second day I didn't do so much
improvements.
The third day I proved a little bit and so on for the next day. So I was always motivated to make the next step. And finally, I did it, yeah, like others too, yeah.
But did you watch videos explaining how to jump on the board, or you just went like, that sounds natural, normal, I'm going to try that?
Yeah, I was looking some videos from Indiana, from Gwen and others on YouTube. And I did a movie from myself always. How do I start? How is the position? But I was always alone. Yeah.
All right. Is there anything that now, are you the guy who does long distance things, or are you also interested in like going into waves maybe, or something similar?
I think for next year, I want to go faster, not with the big wing, with smaller wings. So my nature is to go as fast as possible for a marathon, for 1 hour on inline skates, and not to go 4 hours or more normally. Yeah, it's more for the training on the bicycle. But I'm interested to go for a high speed, for a shorter distance, for a shorter time. To go on in the waves, not yet, because I can't do anything, everything in 1 year. So I always have my work, my family and other things. So I have to make only to focus on one thing or two things. Yeah.
And this was actually one of my questions. And do you have already like a foil in mind that you want to use to go faster, but still something efficient that you can use for that you can ride for a long time?
Yeah, I have one foil from Indiana. I will get in some weeks. And I tested it once. It's a fast one. It's the Barracuda XL. And I think it's possible to go for 1 hour or maybe later. I don't know. But I'm happy to test it again during the winter. And yeah, I will see how far I can go.
Maybe we can get into that story. You said it already. You ride Indiana. How did that happen? Did you start with Indiana gear, or did you eventually change? Is there a possibility that you switch to another brand? Do you test other brand? How is that situation going on?
So when I started, I used the Indiana foil, the P1100. It was a special discount on the website. So I decided to buy it, but then I didn't know Maurus from Indiana. Yeah, after 2 weeks, I managed to pump for 1 or 2 minutes. So I had a contact with Strizzi. He's close from my home, and he sells the F4 foil. And I tried, and I was very surprised. It's I need a lot less energy. And yeah, I bought this setup and was very happy all the winter long. I did some long distance training too, but it was very hard to go for half an hour or longer with the big wetsuit. And then I on the website of Indiana, I saw that they want to make an endurance foil, a big foil for a long endurance training or pump. How can I
just
say?
Just going long distance.
Yeah, for long distance. And then I asked Marus if it's possible to test it and that was the time I get into this Indiana ambassador. I was in Indiana ambassador. And now I'm testing new material, stabilizer and so on, and the boards, and I give my feedback to him. Yes.
So do you get gear and then have to give it back, or do you have to buy it still?
It's both. We have some discount on the new gear. Sometimes when I get something to test, I get it for free, or I can give it back. But normally we have some discount, and yeah, that's it.
Are you still allowed to ride other brands?
I don't have a contract that don't allow to make training with other brands. But in the community, we have so many different brands. So it's normal that we try what is the what is better, what not. I think that makes everybody. Huh? That's, for me, an important thing to improve the sport, to improve the material, huh? when we try other other brands.
And there's so many brands. So I imagine many or most of the brands have some endurance front wings, some carvy wings and whatnot. So that's really interesting. Your current setup is what? And can you please add a stab? So if someone wants to go long distance, he doesn't have to go without stab.
Yeah, my setup is the Gondor XL and with the short fuselage. And normally when I did my records, I did I took the XS, the very small stabilizer. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, I wanted to improve my technique. And I think without stabilizer, you can feel the water better. And every mistake you make has a bigger bigger output, or you fell in the water. So you have to be very smooth and precise. And then I started, and after three or four crashes, I managed to pump for 1K. Went back and decided to make another run. So I felt that it's for me a little bit easier. It's like with the gears on with the bicycle, you have gear from 1 to 9, for example. And when I take the small stabilizer, it's the third gear, and without stabilizer is the first gear. So it makes it for me a bit less exhausted, but more difficult to start and not to make a failure.
But you always use the stab when going long distances?
No, I did already a lap around the lake without stabilizer for 1 hour, 20 minutes. It's not a problem if you don't crash. I don't know what future will tell us. If for long distance it makes sense to go to make a monofoil, something like this, I don't know.
But their axes have these like super skinny highest aspect back rings. Have you tried one of those yet?
No.
They look really interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I did an own stabilizer out of wood. I like to work with wood, but it's not stable enough. So it's about 15 centimeters wide, but it was, maybe with carbon it's better. It would be interesting. How is the feeling?
Yeah, it's funny because we did almost the same thing. You did it with wood. I 3D printed mine, but mine hummed. It was not stable enough. Same with you, right?
Same with me, yeah. With mine, yes.
I don't remember if it was Rob or Rohan mentioning that they still see like the importance of a stab, not only maybe for long distances, but maybe for like carving. You need the stability when you're gonna carve harder. And one of my questions was about your training, because you know, for example, on the bike you can do like a hilly workout or like a overgear work, or even you can do like when you're running, you can do like a tempo run. And how is it for pump foiling? And have you ever thought about adding weight to your board to like work on your like I don't know, on your leg strength to be able to pump for long distance, or you just go and you just try to go as far as possible?
No, for me the pump foiling is still to have fun. I wouldn't say it's a specific training as I have done on the skates. So then, you know, on Wednesday we have these interval things. We make 10 times 2 minute interval with some breaks. I've never done with pump foiling. So it's I just do what I have fun for. When I go for some laps and it's, and I go back to the platform and I watch on, I take a look on my watch to compare the heart frequency and so on. It's more for the testing thing. When I test the stabilizer or other wings, that's it. But I always have fun. It's never you have to go on this day for this time and this distance. For that, I'm too old.
You are always alone when you're doing these laps, right? You're never with someone else, probably because I don't know if anyone can actually go with you, except maybe Jérôme. Have you done laps with him? Could you guys go together and push each other? I know you cannot like reduce air drag, and if you fall behind someone, then it's really difficult to stay stable. But as a companion thing. Would that be something you would be interested in?
Yeah, here in my community and on the Lake of Sempach, we have some pumpers, also woman pumpers. But normally I go early in the morning, so I'm alone. When I go around the lake, there is nobody else who will come with me. But another guy, Livio is his name, Livio Boss. He has now a big front wing too, and he managed to go for 15 or 20 minutes. So we did already two or three training together to go out on the island and then go back. That's very, very fun, not to be alone. But as you mentioned with Jerome, no, I've never pumped with him for a long distance, only at the Ambassador Day last year when we met us in Zurich at the Indiana headquarters. But maybe we have some project to go on another lake. I don't know if it's still, if he, it's, it's
it's a secret.
It's secret, yes. To make a long distance on another lake, yeah, that would be a nice challenge. Yes,
that would be super cool. I would watch that. Really? Do you? Because we had Yvon, who said that one of his favorite things to do is listen to music when he's pump falling. Do you have headphones too, or are you just you nature doing your thing?
No, I'm not a fan of a headphone because I have to it's also during the cycling. I have to focus on the traffic, on other things, because it's a thing of security. When I go pump foiling, I make it because I like it. I have fun. I want to focus on the scenery and want to hear the birds and the trains and so on. That's what I like. So I never listen music or podcasts during the pumping session.
So you're really just focused on whatever happens right now.
Yes, and focus on my technique.
Have you ever done the other thing? Like, have you ever talked to someone while pump falling? Does that make it a lot harder? Or like making videos, you see Gail, sometimes you see me talking to a camera while pump falling.
Once I had a call with another pumper about 20 minutes. So I had my smartphone in a little plastic bag. So I took the smartphone out and I had to take care not to crash in the water. I did a 20-minute pump foil challenge while speaking with him. It's not a problem. When I make a movie with my camera, it's the same. I hold it in one hand and sometimes I speak into the camera. It's not a big problem.
So you could do remote work while doing these 4-hour laps. That is cool.
Yeah, when I went around the lake of Zug, it was 42K. I always had my camera with me in my hand. And I did maybe 30 or 40 episodes. And I was talking and into the camera.
That is super cool.
Maybe people are interested to know if you have like a breathing drill. So for example, every three pumps, then you exhale, like you exhale during three pumps, then you inhale like in two pumps. I don't know. Do you have like such a thing, or just breathe deeply as much as possible?
Yeah, I heard one of your interviews or podcasts, and you say you make every second pump, you breathe in and every second out. I was thinking today about that, and it's for me to say more or less, but I never think about breathing in, out. It's automatically, but it's more or less every second or third pump I breathe in and breathe out. Yeah.
I have a question, and maybe that's also that can help someone listening or myself about the technique. And you said to me before, how you do, maybe you can tell it to our listeners and viewers too. What's the deal with your technique? How can someone like me improve? Do you need more or less arms? Is there something you need to take aware that you press both legs? What's so special about your technique? Is, I mean, being precise, that's also so difficult. Just need to be precise. What does that even mean?
I think Yeah, it depends about the foil. The big foil is very different than the small foils. But I would say you have to feel the water. And to feel the water, you have to have that feeling. You need practice, a lot of kilometers. Another thing, as I mentioned, is to go without stabilizer. I wouldn't say without, but with a smaller stabilizer to feel the water better. And yeah, that's it. It's hard to, but
do you adjust your legs once you feel like I might get a little bit tired? You move them a little more apart, or
It's a very interesting thing. When I started with the big wing half a year ago in April, I was on a good position, I think, in the middle of the board, and my foot was like normal on the board. And as long as the season was, and in August, I have some videos, and I was very surprised because my foot is totally different than at the beginning, and it doesn't look good. I can say you, because a part of my foot is out in the air, is no more on the board. So now I have a wider board, it's no more a problem. But I think when you go for long distance, it's important to have a good position, because otherwise you have probably some muscular problems, chronic problems. And now the first thing I did since the winter, I focus on my stand. How is my foot position? It was interesting with the podcast of Robert. I saw his foot position in his
link
exam.
Here. Yeah. If you want to watch that.
And yes, I'm always focused on my foot position. Now it's again correct, I would say correct. Huh? But two months ago, when I did a little, I tried to stand a little bit different or better on the board, it felt really bad. So like it's wrong. But now I'm again where I am want to be.
Okay.
I'm happy. Yeah.
Do you use your arms a lot? Because Robert said that he is twisted to the front and tried to use his arms in the direction that he's going. Is that anything you can say? Mm. I do that too?
No, I don't use my arms a lot, because for the long pump foiling, I think you don't have to bring that energy with your arms. It's more a rhythm thing. So my underarms are a little bit moving, my upper arms more or less nothing. So I can also go with my hands on the back, like when I make inline skating training. Maybe my arm technique is a little bit different on my right arm because of the skating. My arms go a little bit on the side and not on the back. That's, yeah, maybe you can see it in my videos.
You know what? For you guys who are listening to this podcast, it's also on YouTube. And when he just talked, we added a little video of Nicola today. So you can see that in slow motion. So if you're just listening to it, maybe head over to YouTube and watch that as well.
You mentioned that your feet stance and whatnot. But after so many kilometers on the water, do you feel like you have a muscle imbalance or something? Have you tried riding switch? Do you think that it's something that is going to be super useful to increase your distance even more?
Yeah, I think that would be one of my next goals, to make the switch on the other side. Normally, always I go in the regular position. I want to switch to the goofy position to avoid this muscular disbalance. So I never had problems with my muscles, but some 2 months ago I had a big problem with my back. I don't know what is the reason. Is because of pump foiling? I don't know, because it was not after pump foil session. It was another day. But to avoid to get that risk to have again that pain or other problems with the joints, I want to make the other side. I want to train on the other side too.
Are you planning on starting the other way or switching while riding?
Yeah, first I have to start on the other way and then I want to switch. I don't know what is better methodical, but I think I have to start on the other side and to feel that pumps. I did it already last year in the winter. And I must say, it's like I was like a beginner. I knew how it should be, but I wasn't able to have that movement. So I still need a lot of training.
I don't even have the balance. If I start with my start on the wrong side, I'm not even in the center of the board. It's super hard for me too. Kyle, can you start on both sides?
Absolutely. No, it's not that thing. Yeah.
But it's super interesting. And I think also it's really important. I had some back issues as well. But more about you. And maybe as you can tell us how you do it. Because for me, I go pump foiling. I love it. My wife doesn't love it that much because I'm away quite often. Thank you in that moment to my wife that she lets me do that. But if I go pump foiling, I go for a couple of minutes, I come back, have a break, maybe I go for an hour and I'm done with the whole session, maybe one and a half if I'm excited. But for you, if you go for a session, you have these 2-3 hour sessions, that's a huge difference. How do you do that? I mean, it's super time consuming.
Yes, it's very time intensive because, yes, as you mentioned, normally I don't go for 1 hour. So the other thing is my leg is 20 minutes by car, so it's not so far away, but I still have to go with my car and then go back. So at the end, I am 4 hours away. I have to find a good mix of the with the family. Normally, I go during the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, or both day in the morning early, so they are still sleeping. I'm on the weather when I come back. There maybe 1 or 2 hours already woke up. The other thing is on Thursday, I have a day like off. I'm sports teacher. I have a good job to do for a family and also for sports. In the morning, I go on the lake as the weather is good and I do my training. So normally I'm 2 or 3 times on the lake for the long training. And the other thing is, it's not only the training, it's also like washing the neoprene to dry it and so on, to fix the wing, to change the material and so on. So it's not only the training itself. But yes, I have always to focus on the efficiency, not on the technical efficiencies, but to spend not too much time for nothing. Yes, to be back home for the family.
We didn't actually spend too much time talking about you, your life, your endurance experience, because we covered that probably on the interview we did some months ago, and probably Matt already know that. But yeah, if you can tell quickly about your background, because it's quite interesting and in my opinion is very, very relevant. For the record that you're holding.
Yes, my background is that I am or I was an inline speed skater. If you don't know, the sport is like road cycling, like Tour de France, but not that long distances. Normally we have marathon races, about 42 kilometers, and we have more or less 1 hour for that distance. So we go very fast. There is a start with a big group with many hundred or thousand speed skaters. And then the first who is in the at the finish line, he wins. So, but it's a team sport. So normally you can't go alone with the headwind. So you need a team who works with you. That's my background. It was 2005, and I was 20 years old. I was European champion on the marathon distance. So I was never the sprinter. I always liked the distance. And once I won the 111 kilometer race here in Switzerland. It was the longest one in St. Gallen with one lap. That's what I like. So about last year's the inline races, weren't that big as it used to be 15 years ago. So I started work, I have family, so other priorities. So now I am again motivated with the pump foil. I'm still skating a little bit. I make some races. And I think the pump foiling helps for skating, and the same on the other side. Skating helps a lot for foiling, for the endurance, for the stability, for the balance, for the technique, I think. Yes, my wife's brother, he's an inline skater too. He's more or less or a little bit better than me. He wants now to go on the Olympics on the ice, so he switched to ice speed skating. I hope he will start pump foiling too after the Olympics in 1.5 years. It would be great because then I have a partner to go around the lake. Yes.
That is super cool. Plus, speaking of teaching some other people, you have two kids and one of them started pump foiling too. Is that correct?
Yeah, we tried during the summer. He did 4 or 5 trainings and the kids are learning very fast. He managed to pump four or five pumps and then he crashed in the water. So for 4 trainings, I think it's still good. But as I said, the children, they learn very fast. Unfortunately, he had a little problem with his foot and then we stopped and now it's too cold for him. I don't have a good wet suit for him. So we start again in spring.
That makes a lot of sense. How does he look up to you? Or is he aware that you're holding the world record? Or is that just, well, dad doing his dad things and I don't care?
I think for children is like normal when his dad makes things like, so I'm not a superstar. But once it was on TV or in newspaper and some of his classmates or teachers read it and saw it and they knew it was his father. So he was, I think, a little bit
stolz. Was he embarrassed or was he proud?
He's proud, yes.
All right, yeah. That's yeah. Cool, that's yes. Cool. But I'm exactly in that topic question. How much, like, interviews did he have to give? Was that media attention that you got when you got that world record, or was it just 1 or 2 and it was done?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Did you get a lot of media like question for interviews or being on podcasts and whatnot? Did you have to give a lot of interviews after your world record?
I don't know. Yeah, it was the podcast with Gael. After my first record, yes, we did the podcast. I had some 2 or 3 newspaper who write something about the pump foiling and 1 TV session. And once I was in Austria for another TV broadcast too. It was very interesting and to meet some other people. And for me, it's important to make this sport bigger, that the people know what is pump foiling, to say yes, it's difficult, yes, it's a little bit expensive, but is without motor, without engine, and so on. So yes, but for me it's important that, or I wish that more people will start pump foiling too.
Is there anything, Nicola, you wanted to add or tell us what's next? You said you want to go faster, you want to do the switch thing. Is there anything else?
Yeah, beach start would be interesting. I want to be independent about the platform, on the start platform. So I need other techniques. That would be one of the next goals too. So to go as fast as possible, to make the switch and to make other starts. I don't know if I can do it during this winter. I think I have to focus on 1 or 2 things, but it's important to have still motivated to pump if you have other goals.
All right. They're super tutorials. We have Gaz, super nice tutorial about the beach start. We have Ludo, Freefaller. Maybe you know him as well.
I know, yep.
He's also doing pretty long runs. Nothing compared to you, obviously, but he has also very good beach start tutorials. So there are a bunch of them out there. All right. Then all that's left for me is to tell you who's going to be next. Next episode, number 19, is going to be with Jonas Hiller. And if you've never heard of him, then maybe you didn't watch a lot of ice hockey. He's probably, or he was probably the best or one of the two best ice hockey goalies. He's been in the NHL. And he started foiling. He's like one of the two best guys in downwind foiling. He's doing every week he's doing two or three runs on Lake Neuchâtel, like 40 kilometer runs. He goes up by train, he foils down. Super interesting guy, and I'm really looking forward to meeting him and talking with him about foiling. So that's going to be the next episode. All right, all the listeners, thank you for tuning in. All the viewers, see you guys in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.